I'm going to change my view here because I like to see you all as I am with you all. And I invite you to, I think, or it seems like a lot of people are on with off camera and some people are on camera, and I've been kind of just taking you all in and however you're showing up. I kind of I just invite you to do that too. And part of what Marnie said is I will be exploring with you all this sense of intuitive wisdom and embodied love. And there's a lot in that. And of course, we're together here for what, the next hour and 25 minutes or so, whatever time it is that is where you are. For me, it's like 2 o'clock Eastern time on the East Coast of the United States. I'm in North Carolina in the mountains, Asheville. And I see some places that you are in the chat. And it looks like, again, I'm here again with you all at Sangha Live, and you're all over the world. So I always appreciate just kind of sensing into what it's like to be with a group that is all over the world. Can you hear me okay? I think I just saw speaking up. Okay. All right. So as we sense into the topic, of course, like I'm going to follow what you normally do here and lead a guided meditation. But before we just jump into a guided meditation, the way that I work is to set it up slow and steady this session here together. All right. I don't know about you all, but there's so much happening in the world. And being here with you all, knowing that you're coming from so many different places, and I don't know you, most of you, I don't know. Some of you might know each other, and you've been gathering for a while here, which is really nice. And then some of you might be new, and I don't know who's new. So welcome, regardless of who you are and where you are. And yeah. And so that part of like that slow and steadiness that I have invited us to just kind of sense into, that's part for me how I kind of attune to the moment and then sense into this intuitive wisdom. Like, what might be an appropriate response with you all here? Because this group in this form with you all has never happened before, and it won't ever happen again. Yeah. So that to me is what keeps me showing up in a lot of ways, is that sense of, oh yeah, I don't really know what's going to happen here. And that's the beauty of how I sense into the Dharma, is to remember that I don't really know. And when we incline to intuitive wisdom and embodied love together, that's part of the invitation for you all, is to sense into that quality. In the Zen tradition, it's the don't know mind. Yeah, some of you might be familiar with that. Don't know. I have studied and been mentored a lot with Trudy Goodman, who's Jack Kornfield's partner, and she actually began studying with them before they were together. In a lot of ways, I like to say I grew up in the Dharma and with insight practice. I started when I was 21. And when I first started, I didn't really know what I was doing, in the sense of like, I just wanted to know more about what was happening. I just wanted to know more about what was happening. I wanted to know more about myself. And then I also wanted to get tools to sense into what I'm now able to describe as intuitive wisdom that each of you have. Right. And then as we tune into that and fine-tune those skills, I've also learned to kind of infuse it, incline to heart states, right? Loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity. So before we start to settle maybe a little bit more into the guided meditation, I'm just giving you a sense for me, a sense for us, as you kind of sense into, once again, there's people here on you might have me in big view, but remember, there's a lot of people here. All right. And I'm also curious, well, I'll slowly guide us more deeply into like a formal practice, but I'm also curious before we do that, if you're up for just in your own way, sensing into like what is intuition for you? And do you use that word? Do you use that word, intuition? And what does it bring up when you sense into it? And I want to free us up a little bit and just say it can look so many different ways, right? And that's part of what I'll explore with you all today and invite you into exploring. Is with our practice, we can start to clear away so that we can see very clearly. And then if we have the intention, and I'll invite us into that intention again together. Whatever we see clearly, if we can hold it with love, infuse it with love. And it's a big ask. That's why I'm going to circle back to reminding us the slow and steady that I invited in a few minutes ago. I'm just going to keep reminding of that, okay? Because it'll get muddy, and then with the skills that we learn in our practice, we can clear away again. And that's part of where we're going to shift into a formal practice. If you're up for it, we can, as we shift, all of it's an invitation to see, okay, what happens? How do we know what we know? How do we sense what we sense? As we notice it, what do we sense? And then, oh, whoa, we're alive, okay? So now we've got to, like, there's an action that will come. Like, even if the action is meditation, all right? It's an action. All right. And if we infuse it with love and we incline to the sense of intuitive wisdom, all right. All right. It's not to, we're not trying to bypass anything. And for this moment, as we deepen a little bit more into the guided meditation, I'm going to ask us to just help me set the container together. All right. Because this is a co-creative process. All right. When we come into this, you all entered through various doors. This is part of the way I make sense of intuition. We enter into various doors, metaphorically, symbolically, in some ways. And guess what? Physically, because each one of you is in a room somewhere, maybe outside, maybe on a beach. I don't know where everybody is. This is part of like when we get together, we start to imagine, and imagination can be powerful. So I want to invite you to help me set the container and imagine us. All right. Imagine us here. You there, me here, us together. And then, like, sense into what that's like to know that you're alone together. Some people that might be like, oh, it's a relief. And then some people, it might like actually increase anxiety, and that's okay. All right. But as we sense into our own innate intuitive wisdom, it's good to kind of sense into, okay, so what's you, what's me, and what is the moi? Have you heard that term, the moi? It's like, what's the collection of us here? And how are we wiring together and firing together? All right. You all know this. I'm just reminding us. It's like, oh wow, when we show up here, we're wiring together and firing together. And Thich Nhat Hanh, he said, I just get this image a lot of him talking about the refugee boat, and when the refugee boat, and if the refugees get really agitated, if there's one person on that boat that can be steady, we wire together, fire together, we can slow and steadily be here a little bit more, even if it's just like a centimeter, like just a little bit more together, and we can kind of titrate presence, because you might have noticed when we go into guided meditations, going from 1,000 miles an hour down to 10 miles an hour, that's a big ask. I'm not asking that of us right now. I'm asking us to slow and steady into presence, because I've learned through my practice, and maybe you have too, it's like when I'm slow and steady, then I can see more clearly. And I've learned that when I become more and more present and infused in this moment with awareness and love, then there can be an acquired taste that needs to come online with it. All right. We have to acquire the taste, and part of acquiring that taste for it, for me, is sensing into this, like, okay, how do you intuit and discern alone and together? So that, all right, here we are, a little bit more through all of our doors, various doors, many doors. In the Zen tradition, there's thousands of doors. I vow to enter them all. Right, lots of doors into the Dharma. So now, if you're up for it, I want to go a little bit deeper in the meditation with you. We're already kind of like in between. You might notice we're in between. And you may drop in and out. You may not even, it's fine. So eyes open, close, like whatever posture you're in, you can see that sometimes it breaks down in meditation. It's just like we can learn to flow in it and everything becomes it for moments. I'm also trained in protocol. I've taught lots of mindfulness teachers, so it's nice to be able to kind of like fall back into protocol if I need it. All right, there's the protocol of the basic mindfulness practice. You got your go-to move? What's your go-to move? Sometimes it's breath. Yeah. Sometimes it's just like noticing. And you can do this now with me. My go-to move, I can see trees out my window. And that to me, it's like, okay, slow and steady attention. Rest gently with what you're noticing as a like a butterfly landing on a flower. All right. So whatever you're noticing right now, like a butterfly landing on a flower. Yeah. It could even be sounds. For a long time, sounds was my go-to move. You can be with me there now if you would like. You've been with me partially there, probably already, if not all there. Sounds coming and going. Sound. And you might hear the sound externally, but it has ripples internally. So I'm just going to give you a moment here to kind of sense in what it's like to kind of pull your attention into your own sense making body. And you might notice you can't completely do that because if you're listening to me, there's some part of your attention that's not. And what's it like if you can pull maybe just a little bit more back into your own body? And then I actually invite you to kind of shift down, like back and down just a little bit. And what's that like? Again, if you're up for it, we're just going to set that fine-tuning and that collective co-creation here of like, oh yeah, embodied love, intuitive wisdom, collectively aiming for this. And then because we went through so many different doors to be here together in this moment, I want to fine tune it a little bit more if you're up for it with some boundaries. Because when we sense into intuitive wisdom, I sense into, oh, there's so much here. There's like 62 of us here now. A lot of lives, a lot of ancestry, a lot of joys and a lot of sorrows. So I'm going to ask us now, like, to sense into this moment. And if there's anything, and maybe it's not cognitive, but if there's anything here for you personally that can wait, it can just wait. Just gently invite it to wait. And you may not even know exactly what it is. And maybe you just gently say to yourself, okay, in this moment, I'm aiming towards embodied wisdom, love, intuition. Whatever is not helpful and needed now, may it wait. May it wait. Now, if it comes back like a 2-year-old and starts banging at the door a million times during the session, okay, maybe that's not something to have asked to wait. But right now, most of it can wait. And then, as we all did that individually, it's gonna affect the collective. But now I just wanna bring a little bit more attention to the collective and say, okay, anything else that's here that's not ours, that can't wait, or that can wait, can it be regrouped and redirected? May it be regrouped and redirected. In all honesty, this is kind of like brushing our spiritual hygiene. It's like brushing our teeth. It's like, okay. Just the energies of things. Can we, the vibes of things? May it be regrouped and redirected if it's not here to support us in our collective aim right now. And you may or may not notice a shift, but I'm going to give us a few minutes to just be here now. And you may notice that when we're a little bit more here, attentions still may jump into thinking, and you might have a relationship with that that makes it wrong. I'm going to invite you to soften if that's the case. Thinking is not a problem. Our relationship to it can change. And if the mind is busy, just know it as busy mind. Busy mind is like this. And we have to earn our trust back in our own experience and our experience with each other. So we'll take it again, slow and steady. And if it's comfortable enough for you, I invite you to really sense into your body breathing in this moment. And simply knowing if the breath is long, short, fast, slow. And I invite you, or, just to relax or release any kind of expectations if you're able to around what this needs to look like right now. If there's movement that arises, allow it to arise. Know you're moving. If there's a sense of stillness, know this. And you may be able to sense into both movement and stillness. And you may sense a place in your body that seems steady and at ease. Just one place. Could be just a centimeter. Allow your attention to rest there. And in this moment, invite that sense of steadiness and ease to grow. May steadiness and ease grow. And where is attention now? Just relax into this knowing. And whether you like it or not, this is what's happening. But see if you can allow that sense of impermanence in this moment. Changing sensations, feelings. And where is attention now? I invite you to relax into the knowing and then see if you can get curious. Attention likely goes to what needs attention, and how we work with it is curious. I invite you to take a slight shift back and down if it wasn't thinking. And as you do that, what do you notice? What do you sense? And as we settle a little bit more, you may notice pain, suffering, joys. Happiness. You may notice the full spectrum, but right now for you, what is it that's happening? And are you willing to be imperfectly human, yet intuitively wise and loving? And hopefully, right now in this moment, it's yes. And if you are, maybe see if you can get a little bit more curious. And remembering there's this natural pendulum that happens of expansions and contractions. And when we practice, we can start to see this more clearly. In one moment, it might be expanded, and in the next moment, it might feel contracted. And sensing into the body breathing, maybe just gently inquire, like, what's needed for you in this moment in your practice? And if you're able to answer that need, do it. If you need to move, move. If you need to invite loving kindness to arise, may loving kindness arise. And sometimes when we ask and we inquire, our cognitive minds get stirred up. Sometimes it helps to give ourselves permission to know. I can know this. I can know this. What's needed now? And where is your attention now? Just gently relax into this knowing. Perhaps shifting back and down. Recognizing sensations, feelings, emotions. When you can see it, you're not it. So you can see a little bit more clearly. And now I invite you again to sense into this intuitive wisdom for you. What's it like? Again, perhaps giving yourself permission to know, I can know this. What's intuitive wisdom? What's the sense of it for you? And now, what's happening? Just a gentle reminder that sometimes when we incline to opening together like this, that what keeps us from opening or appears to keep us from opening arises. So I just invite you to just gently note that and track that as we begin to move and shift a little bit out of where we are now, more into me talking a bit more and giving you some more information and my own experiences. So I'm going to shift us here with my voice more. You may notice what that's like to be invited back into more connection with the collective. So if your eyes are closed, I invite you to open them. And then as you do that, and if they were open and you close them, just like notice like what's that like to open and close, open and close. And then sensing into your own body breathing. And I invite you all to glance at the screen now and kind of take in the boxes on the screen again. See if we can come into this sense of fluidity of like, oh yeah, we can move in and out. We can go deep. We can be on the surface with each other. And we don't necessarily always have to have a bell or a specific posture. Sometimes it can be helpful. And then sometimes it can be helpful to remember. Like in the Zen tradition, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. In a lot of ways, that's what I feel like happens with meditation practice, as we learn to kind of empty out into the formless. You may have noticed like moments in the meditation where it becomes, oh yeah, that's stillness. Why is it stillness? Because there's not a thought. So in meditation, in some ways, we can become more and more formless. The input, the thoughts can calm down, the sensations can calm down. Our sense of self can calm down. Yeah. And yet here we are. We're still in bodies together, and we've got to relate. So we move from this meditation, and we can learn to meditate in a way where we can sense our capacity for greater and greater and greater space. Some people say space, right? Greater and greater capacity for moving in the world, relating in the world, and maintaining that sense of interconnection, which that's the hard part, maintaining that sense of interconnection. Whether we're going in or whether we're connecting out. And then, can we hold both together? In, out, together, right? In the Satipatthana Sutta, that's what it teaches us. And the Satipatthana Sutta is what? Not a pop quiz, but just I get really excited about this stuff. The Satipatthana Sutta is where the mindfulness practice instructions are written down in the Buddhist tradition. All right. It's where the protocol, the mindfulness teachings, the protocol was first written down. All right. I've trained a lot of mindfulness teachers. So I get geeky about what's in the sutta. Like, well, how was this really taught? How do we imagine it to be taught? Remember, the Buddhist tradition is, well, passed down verbally through stories. It's an oral tradition. And then it was written down on leaves. I find it curious just to remember the context in which we gather. And I also find for me refuge there because some of it still holds up. All right. Some of the teachings I've used to fine-tune the sense of intuitive wisdom. All right. And then access heart states that support me in the infusion of living in an embodied life and love. All right. And it's hard. I'm not perfect. Remember in the meditation, I asked us if we were willing to be imperfectly human and inclined to cultivating a sense of intuitive wisdom and embodied love. So there's a lot of space there if we're willing to be imperfectly human. I can't see anyone, but I doubt anyone's going to raise their hand and say, I've achieved perfection. And if you do, then I'm really curious about that because it, to me, if we're going to live in this embodied way, we're going to need to get messy right now. Yeah. Do you all feel like you're getting messier in your practice? I feel like that for when I first started, I felt like it was supposed to like clear me out, or it was like gonna purify in a certain way, in a particular way that I inherited. It was an inherited kind of view. But then I realized like really more, it clears me up to be able to see more clearly, and I'm gonna be messier because now it's like, how do you clean up, like how do you clean up the mess that I see? You know, and is it that even a problem? Can we hold it in a way where, yes, we can create more and more suffering. That's not what I'm saying. Right. But in order to really like be with it, the suffering in an embodied way, I've got to be willing to get messy, to not really have all the answers. Do you all feel like you have all the answers right now? I mean, sometimes maybe you want to believe you have all the answers. But I don't have all the answers, and I don't haven't met anyone that does, and I don't even have that expectation anymore. So why is that important? Some of you might be like, what? Like, why is this important with intuitive wisdom? You know, just, and I'll open it up more and we'll get into like questions and stuff. But these are like just some questions to hold here as an inquiry together. Like, why might it be important to relax around needing to know the answer and relax around this training of like looking for someone else to have the answer? And with mindfulness practice, it's like in the Satipatthana, it says, okay, cultivate it internally, cultivate it externally, and then cultivate it internally and externally. So there's a lot going on internally. You saw that probably in the meditation we just did. And we're still in it, and by the way, in some ways. And our attention is now divided because it's divided more because we've opened into the collective. So do you feel how do you feel in your nervous system and your bodies right now? Probably more conjumbled than if we were when we reined it in. Remember when we reined it in? You're more in your internal bubble. And now we're more in our collective. Oh, wait, I'm asking you also to be in touch with your own experience too. Okay, so now, whoa, we still have 62 internal bubbles plus wiring together, firing together, people that kind of know. Some of us might know more than others. So intuitive wisdom and embodied love. Since then, like I just got in my belly, I'm like, whoo, it's a lot to kind of name. So what do you need in this moment to kind of stay in that sense of interconnection? I'm going to invite us to consider, I propose that part of staying connected to intuitive wisdom and embodied love, how I can remember is, like I said, I kind of take refuge in the Dharma and the teachings and say, does this live up to my experience? Actually, yes. Does this help me with my experience and navigating it? Yes. All right, let's keep going. So, the three marks of existence, impermanence. So, things are so, it's changing so much right now. All right. Sometimes we block our like in sense of that intuitive wisdom when we forget that it's gonna change, right? And then sometimes we want it to change so badly and it's not changing like we like it. And so again, we're muddy. All right. So our relationship with impermanence for me has helped highlight when I'm in touch with this sense of intuitive wisdom and when I'm muddy. You all understand what I mean by muddy? Like another way I kind of describe it is like I feel like if something is happening in my body, mind, heart system where I just keep getting these certain kinds of I just keep getting it feels like I'm on a washing in a washing machine and I just can't get off that cycle. In the Buddhist tradition that might be called samsara. It's like, oh, that's how I feel in my body with it. It's just like it keeps turning me around and around and around. Some people ask me how to let go, and I'm like, sometimes you just have to go around and around and around until you get chewed up and spit out. And like, ah, you had that experience sometimes where it's just like, you can't, you just have, you kind of like, oh, I give up. But in a give up way, what are we giving up to in our practice? This is where I want to kind of, with intuitive wisdom and impermanence, things are changing sometimes so fast. We've got to kind of incline to some sense of refuge. For me, it's mindfulness. It's like being able to see what's happening as it's happening, even if it's just in one moment. And then trusting it will change, like knowing it's going to change. Now, it might not change on my time frame. All right. Now, if I'm in that washing machine and I want it to change, like right now, like part of the counterintuitive approach is to to be with that part of us that can see it, that can observe it, if you're able to access that. And if not, that's when I look at the trees. All right, things are moving so fast. Look at the trees. So the next one, so there's impermanence, and then there's this in the Buddhist tradition. It kind of tells me if I need to like work and focus on getting out of the washing machine first, or if I can kind of sense into, oh yeah, like if there's something in my experience that doesn't collaborate, it doesn't work with interconnection, which is in the Buddhist tradition, it's no self, but I'm gonna like actually translate it as interconnection. All right. Because sense into it, and sometimes it can get really heady, but that's okay. It's okay to get heady with it. But when we sense into just even this collective and we're here together, anything that's going to come in and kind of create this facade that we're actually not in this together, then that I'm gonna like actually put a like a yellow sticky note on. I'm not actually in the sense of intuitive wisdom if there's a sense of separation. And that's hard these days because there is a lot happening in the world, and I would like to kick some people out of it. But with this, it's not, it doesn't align with my experience and my practice. The deeper I've gone, the more interconnected we are. And so that's the acquired taste I find is really hard right now. Is how do we navigate in this world where we're really interconnected? This sense of intuitive wisdom can come online, highlight that even more. And then we turn on the news, or we turn on Instagram, or we turn on TikTok, or we turn on, and that's just like we're constantly bombarded. It's really painful to maintain a sense of interconnection. Yeah, along with things are changing and sometimes so rapidly. Ah, right? That's why this is like an acquired taste. Right? And it's not just like here's where I feel like the rational mind can hold a little bit here, because without some sort of rationality, this sense of intuition, it can kind of go back to where, oh wait, what am I going to do? I'm going to go trans, like pre-rational. And then where do we go in pre-rational? Pre-rational, we usually again search outside of ourselves for answers and then say, oh, they've got it. And right now it's really hard to do that because we have to have a lot of discernment because we're getting a lot of different perspectives. We're getting a lot of different opinions. We're getting a lot of different views right now. Yeah? Are you with me with that? All right. So if we drop our rational mind and we go back and we say, okay, someone out there has got it, then that can be very disorienting, and it's going to be hard to sense into our intuitive wisdom. So then if we come back here and say, okay, let's get in touch with my own sense, we can't just stay there. We have to toggle. We have to kind of go back and forth. All right. But our rational minds need to know, like, okay, wait a second. Why is it worth that toggle? That's kind of what my rational mind said in a while. Like, why? So, Daniel Siegel. You all familiar with Daniel Siegel? He's an MD, clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA School of Medicine. He said our socially embedded self and our embodied self have overlapping neural circuitry. These findings remind us what the triangle of human experience depicts. The self, as experienced as the mind, is in fact both embodied and relational. These brain scan findings offer supportive empirical evidence that the mind is, in fact, emerging from both the bodily and the social context in which we live. All right. So it's like happening both. We can't disconnect even if we don't. Even if we want to, even if we think we can, like science is now like starting to say, oh yeah, that's Satipatthana Sutta, guess what? It would be a lot easier. Not difficult, yes, but it would be a lot easier if we start to really sense into the impact, the implications of, oh yeah, okay, this intuitive wisdom, it's not just individual, it's collective, and then let's hold it both together. And then if we can be present both together, whew, and we'll go deep, and then we'll come back and say, like, okay, what's your favorite TV show right now? And that's okay. Spiritual practice, it's not just like talking about the Dharma all the time, It's about embodying it, living it, and watching Netflix or whatever else you enjoy to do. So A.H. Almas, from the book Luminous Night's Journey, and he came up with the diamond approach. And what I find interesting too, it's like in the 70s, there are all these interesting approaches that start to pop up, right? The diamond approach, somatic experiencing, insight meditation, came over to the West. So there's like these ways and these methods to start to fine tune and sense into, like, okay, what is it like if we have these skills? What is it like to actually use them? And then wait a second. Oh, wait, we've got to create something new, y'all, based on where we've been. And that's hard. And that's where the embodied sense of love comes in. But for right now, I'm going to tell you this quote from A.H. Almas. He says, presence gives us a sense of immediacy, of fullness, of here-ness in the experience. It gives a sense of immediacy and directness that suffuses the experience, that pervades it and fills it, so that our awareness, our consciousness, is not only observing it from a removed place, but also from within it. It is as though our nerve endings were inside the experience, outside the experience, and in between. They are everywhere and feeling the experience and all its possibilities. That's when we know the experience fully and completely. And that's where we access this sense of intuitive wisdom. It's like when we really can clear away whatever mud is there, whatever keeps us in that spinning, like rumination or sense of contraction. Or if we get really absorbed in the other, right? If we get really absorbed in so many things we can get absorbed in, quote unquote, out there. All right. But when I sense into this attunement in the moment, attuning to heart, mind, body, and then also working towards collective attunement. All right. Like working towards it. We're like, we have 58 people still with us. Like we're still working towards collective attunement here. All right. I can feel it sometimes. It gets bumpy. People don't understand I'm saying. And then, oh, wait, that made sense. That didn't make sense. We're filtering all the time. We're discerning and we're judging. Can you sense into the difference between discerning and judging? Intuitive wisdom. All right. Discernment. It's like prajnaparamita, that sword of clarity. All right, discerning. So then the third mark that I haven't touched too much on is suffering, right? I mean, I've named it, I've named the collective suffering. I've named we all brought personal suffering in here. But it's interesting because, like, with the sense of intuitive wisdom and embodied love, there is this like intersection with suffering that's like, oh yeah, what the Buddha taught, there is suffering and there's freedom from suffering. Right. A lot of the suffering that's being caused right now, I feel like my life work is to like wake up and be like, it doesn't have to be this way. And it is. And all right. I don't know what the action looks like for me sometimes. Do you sometimes know what to do? These are the questions that I get a lot as a teacher right now. It's like, what do I do? I get that a lot. Do you have that question in some form? What am I supposed to do? What do I do? And that is not, that's like, if I were to sense into it a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, it's a really deep question. What do I do? Right. And I want to propose to us that that's part of how we do something, even in this moment you're doing it. Right. If you don't think about it too much, you're here, you're showing up. This isn't easy stuff to show up in. So, what is yours to do? What is mine to do? And if it's not clear cognitively, that's where that sense of intuition, how do you know what you know? How do you know what you know? For me, it's like I get these thought imprints that come. And I know those thought imprints are very different than other thought imprints. All right. Certain thoughts have vibes that are very different than the sense of intuitive vibe. All right. Or is it symbols? Is it images? Is it kinesthetic for you? All right. And just remember, it changes. All right. Impermanence, it changes. Now, if there's a sense where the interconnection, like something's telling you, ooh, in this moment, I don't feel interconnected. Okay. Honor that. All right. Honor it. And then, I wonder. What in this moment can inform me? Out of love, you can aim to love, like, okay, may loving kindness arise, especially if it's difficult. If you feel blocked and not interconnected, usually what's coming up is difficult. Maybe it passes quickly. May it pass quickly. Right? May it pass quickly. It changes. All right. And sometimes we might need to do some other work with it. We might even have to go to trauma counseling or something, right? And that's okay. All right. Because what keeps us from feeling interconnected can go very, very, very deep on this human world, in this human world. And what keeps me coming back and showing up is that sense of, yeah, there is suffering. And we can move in and out of it. And we do, we can learn to hold joys more. And there is a sense that we can alleviate suffering. I can alleviate it. You can alleviate it. The mui can alleviate it. All right. Have you noticed that sometimes difficulties are easier with people? You know, they're d usually easier with people. Now, the whole world, maybe, but you know, you can just like you open the door to get here, you can open it wide open or you can open a crack. Okay. Like you, this is part of this sense of intuitive wisdom and embodied love. We've got to learn how to, like, all right, expand, contract, open the door, shut the door. We have these capacities and we have to earn our own trust back that we can do it. Because a lot of times we've been invalidated, gaslit. We don't even realize what all we know. And then my teacher, Trudy Goodman, says the mind is like a thief. It comes in and tries to steal our experiences. It's like, how many times have you known something? And you're like, oh, I think. And then you do something different than what you know. And then you look back and you say, oh, I knew that. I knew that. All right. So that's that gap that, you know, I invite us to work with. It's like, okay, yes, we do know. We know how connected we are. All right. At a deep level, you know this. All right. In the Buddhist tradition, it's like you are nobly born. And then what comes up? The mind is like a thief, comes in and steals our experiences. There are moments collectively where that interconnection is severed. It feels that way. It feels that way. And then we have to remember collectively that doesn't have to be that way. That's hard. That's hard. All right. That's really hard. So I just give you lots and lots of like, yeah, meta, that you're here and that you're showing up and that you're curious. I think I'm gonna just open it up now. We have some time here. I have more in front of me, and I do. I want to hear from you all and sense what's here, and if there's something that I can support you with, or just if you want to give voice to something, that's fine too. I want to open it up. We can do it slowly too. Well, what's here? Anything you'd like to voice? Feel like you all are digesting, figuring out, okay, I like that. I'm not sure about that. And I do invite you all to just kind of, yeah, take what lands and leave what doesn't. I see a couple hands. Marnie, are you calling on people or am I? I guess maybe I should. I
Yeah, you
forgot.
can, and then I'll bring them on next to you.
Okay. See if I can find
If
my.
I can only bring them on next to you if their videos are on. Otherwise, they can unmute when you call on you.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just trying to remember the logistics of this now. Sorry, guys. Margo, do you want to go? I saw your hand first.
Yes, my name is Margo. I thank you for your wisdom. This session today is very apropos because I'm really suffering of interconnectedness that I think I'm in the process of resolving a relationship with a family member that was very destructive, and it has interrupted my ability to be interconnected. It has caused me to be distrusting of human beings in general. And I had another very unfortunate experience as a teenager that I won't name, but I've spent a lot of time alone in my life because it's been so hard to connect with people with a good feeling. And I've been afraid to open myself up to the connectedness you're talking about. I'm fine with a one-on-one, but any more than a one-on-one with someone who I feel comfortable with and trust, is overwhelming for me. And I'm very sensitive. But what you're talking about is exactly what I need to work through with my mentor. And I think she's going to be very helpful and she'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And you're enabling me to define it much better than I could an hour ago. So I'm really grateful.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And, my experience is in working with people, it's like the group work, it can be some of the most challenging work for people. And to earn my own sense of trust back in myself, where it's like I had to really learn that, like in a group, I can regulate my own sense of my own nervous system and the relationship to all the input that comes in. It's like I don't have to, one, take it all so personally. And then at the same time, it's like maintain that sense of steadiness and rootedness in the seat where, in the Buddhist tradition, there's that sense of equanimity, that mind state. The heart states have just helped me so much. It's like that sense of equanimity that's like, okay, I can be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things. It doesn't mean that it's not painful. Yeah, it doesn't mean that's like, ooh, that's really painful that I'm gonna have to set that boundary because that person really violated, my heart and my body and my mind. And I can set that boundary and eventually, have that sense of like, okay, the pain can be there and the love can be there and all this complexity can be there. And here we go. Here we go.
Yeah, so I'm the verge of acquiring those tools, and I'm so eager to learn. So any group situations that you recommend,
And you can.
I'd be interested in.
Yeah, and you can, and part of it is just like my recommendation to everybody is like really tune into like we're and our rational minds can say a lot of different things about it, but there's more and more science to validate this sense of vibes. The vibes are in right now, that terminology. And it's like to really get in tune with a vibe and okay, even with the thoughts, it's like, is this thought mine? Is this thought yours? How many times have we had those moments where it's like, oh, I had that thought too, and somebody says it. Yeah. So it's like those kind of subtle things can help us when we get into groups because it's like sometimes we're picking up on somebody else's stuff and we can say, oh yeah, that's not mine. And it can free us up where it doesn't feel as For me, it doesn't feel as threatening in the collective environment, with some things because it's like, oh yeah, I can say no, that's not mine. Oh yeah, I need to pay attention to that, because a lot of it just arises and passes. You can just let it move through.
Thank you. It's comforting to know someone can articulate what it's like, what it is.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Right, let's see. Marnie, if you see someone, feel free to let me. I'm just trying to find.
There is someone. Yes, Asholo Pilton. I'll bring them on.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Oh, I
First
think.
of all, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for the session today. I'm not on camera. I'm still in my pajamas, honestly. And mainly what came up was, like, again, that impermanence part of life, right? Like, what recommendations you may have. As for me, it's always been like, there's always going to be something happening. Like one day I'm like happy go girl, the next day I have bursitis. Then I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna let it go. It's just gonna be ongoing, right? Then aging is gonna come just around the corner. I'm 50s, in remission for ovarian cancer as well, but I'm grateful, because I know I'm still here. I've been really close to death probably twice in my lifetime, and I'm still here. But I like what you say about impermanence because it's never ending. And I'm just gonna, and mindfulness really helps me with like just being grateful with what I have, compassionate towards myself. Yeah, I'm not young anymore. I'm not 23, and I injured my knee biking like I was a 23-year-old. I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? And now I ended up with an injury that I'm trying to baby. And so is life. I'm like, but I kind of laugh about it because I'm like, that's all I got left to with it. Like, I'm just gonna enjoy my family. My parents are aging, dealing with it too. I mean, my dad's 83, but I see it and it makes me sad to see it. But I know one day I'll be in that situation, perhaps, hopefully not as bad as he's going through. But as an athlete, you know, we wear and tear our body parts. You know, as an athlete, most of my life and enjoyed it all, enjoyed all the hikes, enjoyed all those rides. And but now it's like a moment where I have to like be mindful of my body and just nourish it, you know, because I'm not 23 anymore. I wish. So I thank you for the talk of impermanence because it's ongoing for me. And one day I'm happy go dandy girl, and next day I wake up with bursitis pain. I'm like, oh my God, where did that come from? But it's okay. I'm still here.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I know I can relate somewhat to what you were sharing as far as like, yeah, one day is expanded and there's those thoughts, oh, I can do this. What was the problem yesterday? You know, it's like, oh, what's the problem? This is like, I don't know why I was so stressed out. It's great. Life is awesome. And then yeah, it can shift in a day, it can shift in a night, it can shift in a moment. And like just I invite all of us to just kind of sense into like what happens when we start to acknowledge it. Like what happens when we start to acknowledge it? To me, you know, there's different things that can happen, but sometimes it's like right, it can bring the anxiety and increase anxiety. And then sometimes it's a relief that things change. And so even this is highlighting that our relationship to things is even changing. I don't know if this will land for you all, but when I'm speak or when I'm working right now with people, more and more, I'm having this image come up more and more, and I pay attention to images and themes. That's how this sense of intuitive wisdom, I feel like it speaks to us sometimes in images and just recurring themes. And I'm getting this one in regards to impermanence a lot of the let's see if I can remember what it's called, kaleidoscope. You know, the kaleidoscopes where you look through and it's so beautiful. And then one piece changes and then everything changes. And there's been various points in my practice where things have changed, but it doesn't feel that rapid. To me right now, talking to people and in groups, it just feels like there's more of a rapid sense of change happening. It feels like that those little pieces are turning and it's like trying to like reorganize. And I've seen this through my practice so many times. It's like when one thing shifts, a lot shifts. Sometimes it takes a while for all the pieces to fall back into a place, but right now I feel like it's kind of like doing this a lot. It's like steadying and then it shifts and it steadies and then it shifts. My refuge in that. I'll share this with you actually. I had it, but it didn't come up before. It's coming up now. Ajahn Sumedho, he wrote a book called Intuitive Awareness, and he's within the insight meditation tradition. He says, awareness is your refuge. Awareness is your refuge. Now, when I say awareness, and I feel like this is mostly what Ajahn Sumedho says, awareness. You know, when you look in the mirror in the morning or whenever you just look in the mirror and it's just a reflection, y'all. It's just a reflection. Okay. And then we add everything onto it. All right. Oh, I don't like my hair. Oh, my hair is awesome. Oh, wait. I've got circles under my eyes today. Oh, wait. Right. So that's all extra. That reflection, that moment of just the reflection, that's awareness. All right. So it holds everything. All right. When we recognize it, impermanence, it's like the backdrop to the shaking kaleidoscope. Well, it happens within it. This is where it gets a little weird trying to put language on it. But it's like all that impermanence happens within awareness. It's like, okay, if we can sense into the reflection of it, it's okay. Yeah, it's just a reflection. There's that sense of deep okayness. Well, sometimes people say that in the Dharma. Deep okayness, just the reflection. And then impermanence happens, and then all that stuff gets added onto it. And that's valid, okay? Because grief comes up with impermanence. Grief is like really what we're working with when we're deepening into impermanence. So he says, Ajahn Chah says, awareness is your refuge. Awareness of the changingness of feelings, of attitudes, of moods, of material change and emotional change. Stay with that because it's a refuge that is indestructible. It's not something that changes. It's a refuge that you can trust in. This refuge is not something that you create. It's not a creation. It's not an ideal. It's very practical and very simple, but easily overlooked or not noticed. When you're mindful, you're beginning to notice it's like this. It's like this. So even if you can kind of sense into, oh yeah, things are changing, it's impermanent. Okay, yeah, it's like this. And, right, sense into that perhaps refuge of, okay, there is something in me and all of our experiences that can just reflect back and be okay with this moment. All right. Doesn't mean it's not painful, right? And then we can, for me, it's like I've learned how to like access the heart states more and more and more. They're here. They're here. And then that makes impermanence a little bit more workable. All right,
Emily,
let's see.
there's a question in the chat by
Yep.
Seth. Do you want me to
Yep.
read it or do you see it?
Sure, if you can help me with that kind of thing, that would be great.
If you have made a decision about a relationship, what makes you go back and rethink it? Is this a place to use intuitive wisdom for an answer?
Relationships. Is there a place to use? Okay. Well, I feel like, there's so much to that question. So I'm not gonna, if we had more time and space, I'd unpack that more. This is definitely one of those that I would unpack more. Speaking through the lens of what I've learned in meditation practice and Dharma practice, it's like our minds will go back and revisit where there's energy and where there's charge. Okay. So if something, some people might say if it's unfinished or I don't know the appropriate framework for you and for us. Like I feel like this is part of what comes online when we don't look outside of ourselves so much for answers, when we start to kind of like, okay, yeah, like what, let's have like this dynamic kind of approach to our spiritual practice. But what I've seen is like if we go back and rethink it, some framework might be healing. There's healing that needs to happen, right? And how do we heal? Many different ways. And kind of revisiting something in this context with the way that you set up this question, that causes me to like get curious. Like maybe there is something that we're healing when we're going back and revisiting. Right. Now, if we can't, if we're always going back to something and it's just like really strong and we, and that's when there might be another approach that's needed. All right. There, another approach might be needed to titrate that, to work with the energy of it. 'Cause we're talking about vibes and sometimes vibes can get quite strong. All right. Quite strong. And that's part of what I see in my students. It's like, well, I don't want to get lost. I'm too scared. I'm not going to be able to handle it. All the, like this stuff comes up and it's a landscape that's very tender. And so just to say yes, I feel like it's natural to revisit in our minds and our hearts when there's charge and residue. And the place for intuitive wisdom, part of what's the intuitive wisdom part is like no one really can say, oh yeah, that's the place that you need to do it, or you need to, it's like it's really coming back into this like innate ability that we all have to listen to our own body, hearts, and minds and make adjustments. Right. And decisions, like I'm very curious about how decisions are made. Like when are they really made? Are they made in the moment? that happens? Are they made before that? All right. And then, with intuitive wisdom, it's like part of it, remember the impermanence of it and the interconnection and the suffering. It's like aiming all three of those were process. All right. It just points to me that like we're in constant process. And so with answers, I like to allow them to be in constant process. All right. It frees me up. All right. To play with the boundaries of like not all or nothing. Maybe it needs to be. Maybe it doesn't. So I don't have you here, Sat, to be able to go back and forth, but hopefully that landed in some way. I feel like we have time for maybe one more, maybe two.
Aaron has been waiting.
Okay,
So
awesome, Aaron. I can't hear you, Aaron. I can't hear you. I don't think I can ask you to unmute, can I? Oh, there you are. I got you.
okay. Every time you say something, I think, no, I'm going to say that instead of that. So for me, okay, I knew the exact moment when I made a decision, and it was about a 24 year relationship. And it was, as you said, the refuge of awareness. Now, I'm not going to get into what I've been practicing, which is awareness of awareness, but I became aware through meditation over the course of a couple of weeks, maybe more, that there was something I did not want to know. And I was very aware of it. It was somewhere, in my abdomen area. And I decided I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to be courageous and I'm going to see what that is. So I began on, it was like a ball of string, and I just started unraveling it. And, it was a long meditation. When I got to the end, I knew what the answer was. I was ending a 24 year relationship. I just knew. And but the curious thing to me was I didn't want to know. And I had I guess, no, I don't know if it was the hindrances or I know exactly what it was. Sometimes when I speak, it comes to me. I was clinging. I was hanging on to something I remembered from the past, a lot of things I remembered from the past. And as the string unraveled, I went, wait a minute, that doesn't even exist. We're impermanent. He basically has not changed. I've changed dramatically for a variety of reasons. I've been in programs and stuff. But when we put our values together, they just didn't match up. But I still didn't hear it. I didn't hear what he was saying. I didn't hear what he was doing. It was only in deep meditation that I could let go of what I was remembering, what I was clinging to. That did not even exist anymore. And the really funny thing is, this is my second home. So I got here, and people, this just yesterday, we decided we'd end it. But people thought I should be more devastated than I was. But I'm not, because I realize that there is a flip side. to this suffering that I've been putting myself through by clinging. And that the other side of the suffering is this, and I don't know if you're going to laugh or whatever, it's a kind of freedom. Like I'm free now to do, not just do what I want. I'm free to, I don't know, sit here and meditate in the pool, read Rob Barbea. I don't know. But I wonder if you have thoughts about what happened. Was it clinging? Was it? I had this intuitive knowing that I didn't want to know, if that makes sense.
And that feels like that's an appropriate place to like begin and to end the session on in some ways, is because and with intuitive knowing, it is very challenging. You know, it's like it's very challenging because, you know, a lot of us, we do like that sense of comfort and familiarity, even if it's causing us pain and so and suffering. And so to really clear away and see clearly and sit in that sense of wisdom, it's like, okay, yeah, what is it that is here? Can I really face it with courage and love and know it, give myself permission to know it? And it's like, okay, once I know it, that's not that that's the beginning and the end too. That's the birth and the death. It's like, oh yeah, your relationship ended and something else was born in just that moment. But then, you know, there's all kinds of ramifications. You know, that one thing shifts in the kaleidoscope and it's like, yeah, it's going to take a little bit to reorder. And part of that reordering process is that looking back and going, I know that, but no, I don't. And no, I wish I could go back and not see it. Or, oh, now I'm anxious. Now I'm angry. Now I'm confused. Like there are things that come after seeing clearly. That's part of the process too. And it's like to really just be able to, oh yeah, okay, whatever this is in this moment, it may be muddy. Okay, I know this. This is what muddy feels like. And all right, can I incline to like being imperfectly human, wise, and loving? Like that's pretty much my go-to right now. So.